We're holding on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis, about two-thirds of the way down the Amud, 13 lines from the end of the narrow lines. We looked in the Mishnah. We're talking about the various stages that you might find in an Irani Dachas, what we do with the various ones. So we said Trumas Yerokvu. If we find Truma in the Irani Dachas, then we leave it to rot. We said we don't actually burn it because that would be a bizoyan to it, but we can't use it either because it's property of the Irani Dachas. You're not allowed to have enough from it. So the Gemara says, Amar Chisa, Loishna ala Truma b'yad Yisrael. That applies only if the Truma is currently in the hands of the Yisrael, so he designated it as Truma, but he didn't yet give it to the Kohen. Well, therefore, so the Yisrael himself, even though the Yisrael himself is a Rasha, but you wouldn't burn his Truma because it's not really his. He had the choice, after all. He could have given it to any Kohen. He could give it to a Kohen who's a tzaddik in a different city, where they were melee. If he gave it to a tzaddik in town, then that would be burnt as well, because the nechasim of tzaddikim get burnt too. But he could have given it to a tzaddik from another town, and therefore we can't say that we should burn it. On the other hand, in other words, in effect, it would be like a pikodin, Rashi explains. We learned yesterday that a pikodin from somebody in another city that's located currently in the Irani Dachas is not burnt. On the other hand, maybe he would have given it to a Kohen who was a Rosha in town. And therefore, so because of that suffix, basically, we have to leave it to Roth. Avol, but Rav Chista says, Truma b'yad Kohen, but if the Truma is already in the hands of the Kohen, then Kibin de Mamonu, who it is, after all, the property of the Kohen, Kisarif, then it has to be burnt, whether the Kohen is a Tzaddik or a Rosha. But the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, I have a contradiction. The Mishnah had continued, Maiser Sheni v'kistra HaKodesh Yigonzu. We said that Maiser Sheni that you find in the Irani Dachas, or money of Maiser Sheni, as we learned yesterday, or Kistra HaKodesh, books of Tanakh, Yigonzu have to be put in Gniza, because again, you can't burn them. You can't burn them, but you can't have Hanah from them either. Now, v'ha ma'isa sheni b'yad Yisrael k'truma b'yad koyen dami. Now, when a Yisrael has ma'isa sheni in his possession, that's functionally the equivalent of a koyen having truma, because the same way as the koyen can eat truma, the same way the Yisrael can eat the ma'isa sheni. V'katani yugonzu, and yet we're saying that he should put it in gniza. Implying that why should it be if it's biyad koyen we should burn it? Even if it's biyad koyen, we should still say that it would have that the din would be given that the Yisrael could eat it, could take it to Yerushalayim and eat it any time, or redeem it and eat it anywhere outside Yerushalayim. Even then, it should be considered his. Then it should be based on what Rav Chista is saying. It ought to be considered his moment, and it ought to be burnt. And yet we're saying no. So you're right. Eli itma hochi itma. Rather, if it was said, then here's how it was said. Omer of Chista lo shonu ala truma biyad koyin. The other way around, when the truma is in the hands of the koyin, so even though it has already been given to him, and it is his moment, nevertheless, because it's called kodesh, therefore we're not going to be so mezalzel in it. We're not going to treat it so disrespectfully as to burn it. So we'll have to leave it to rot. And as we talked about yesterday, now, in principle, you would say the same thing with Maaser Sheni, but Maaser Sheni sometimes is coins where you can't leave it to rot, and therefore you put it in Gniza. But by Truma, which by definition is always going to be produce, then you can leave it to rot. So if it's in the hands of the Kohen, then you do that. Aval Truma b'yad Yisrael, but Rav Chista says if the Truma is in the hands of a Yisrael, and there, after all, he has the option of giving it to a Kohen in a different city where it won't be burned anyway, then yeah, Tinosam a Kohen, Shav Iracheres, you give it to a Kohen in a different, city, and that's that. It doesn't become Osir by the fact that it belonged to a Rosha in town, because the fact remains that it doesn't really belong to him because he can't eat it anyway, and it has to be given to the Kohen. There is a point that Achroinim bring up about a concept called Toivas Hanah Mama, and you have a concept that comes up in various areas of Halacha that sometimes we say You may not have actual ownership of something, but you have what's called toivas hanah in it. Namely, in the case of truma, you have the right to give it to whoever you want, and you could even have, that could have a monetary value. You could have, for example, that a Yisrael could come over to you and say, you know, I have a grandson who's a Kohen. My daughter married a Kohen, and therefore my grandchildren are Kohenim. Here, let me give you some money, and you'll give your truma to my, and you'll give your truma to my grandchildren. So that can be worth money. You have a discussion in various places in the Gemara whether Torah Sanah Mammon or Torah Sanah Enim Mammon. If you say over here that Torah Sanah Mammon, then why would we say that? Then why would we say that you could give it to the Kohen? The fact is, it would be considered the Mammon of the Yid. So the Aruch HaNer points out over here the fact is there was a Machlokas Tanoim about it, about whether Torah Sanah Mammon or not. So then he goes on to explain that there's a reason why not to apply that case that din in this case either.
There's also an issue for a coin to buy the to pay for the truma directly.
No, so that's true. A coin himself can't pay for the truma directly. That's correct. But here we're talking about that Yisrael can go to the coin and say to him, you know what? One Yisrael can go to another Yisrael and tell him, you know what? Why don't you give the coin to my nephew? To my grandson. Why don't you give it to my grandson? And that way he'll stand to benefit. So Yisrael is perfectly allowed to do that. So the Aruch HaNer deals with that over here and kind of leaves it tzaruch iyun why we don't say that. The Minchas Chinuch, in fact, wants to say that yes, maybe according to the opinion that Torah Sanah Mammon, the din of Rav Chisda, would not apply. There's some discussion about the ins and outs of it among Acharonim. The Gemara goes on. Tnan Hosam. Now we learn in a Mishnah. There is a point over here that even now why would you have to give it to a Kohen who's Davka from outside the city? It comes out that Rashi actually uses the expression that you can give it to a Kohen who wasn't Hudachimohem, the Kohen who wasn't convinced to worship Avodah Zarah with them. So Achronim talk about also that on the face of it, that would mean you could give it even to one of the Kohenim in town as long as he didn't worship Avodah Zarah. And the question is, how wouldn't his property have to be destroyed as well? Sanhedrin Tana gives an answer that, listen, you know, if a person were to acquire nechosim after the city becomes an irani dachas, we wouldn't say that those nechosim are destroyed, only the nechosim that he owned when it became an irani dachas. So in effect, this would be like that. The Gemara said tznan chosim. We learn in a Mishnah. It's actually a Braisa in Pesachim. Issa shel Maisa Sheni Pturim and Achala. A dough of Maisa Sheni is potter from Chala, Divrei Reb Meir. Macham Machayv and Macham would say that such a dough is Chayv and Chala. So the point is, that's the we're going to bring that in over here because that's going to be relevant. We're going to bring in our din over here about Maisa Sheni and an Irani Dachas. So Omer of Chisda, so Rav Chisda explains Machlokas the Maisa Sheni B'Yerushalayim. The Machlokas is when the Maisa Sheni dough is located in Yerushalayim, and therefore you're able to eat it over here. Your Maisa Sheni, you can eat only in Yerushalayim. So now the Machlokas is Rav Meir Sava Maisa Sheni Mammon Gavayahu. Rav Meir holds that Maisa Sheni is always considered the property of Hashem. Yes, Hashem gives you permission to eat it, but fundamentally it belongs to Hashem, which is relevant as far as other areas of halacha as well. It means according to Rav Meir, you can't be Makadish a woman with Maisa Sheni even in Yerushalayim because it's not yours to be Makadish with. So you don't have to give challah from it. But Rabbanan Sabri, Mum and Hedyot, who is the Chacham say fundamentally it belongs to the Hedyot. Yes, you have restrictions on it, but that's not enough to make it that it's not his. So therefore it's chayiv and challah. Aval, but Rav Chisda says, Begvulin, if this dough is located outside Yerushalayim, if it's located outside Yerushalayim, so then you for sure can't eat it until you either redeem it or bring it to Yerushalayim. Divrei Hakol Potter, then everybody would agree that it's Potter because now it's Mammon Gavoya and you can't eat it. And that would mean, in other words, even Rashi explains, even if later on you brought it to Yerushalayim, the fact is you needed this dough, and it became chayiv and challah when you couldn't eat it yet, and therefore it remains potter after that as well, because challah always go, the chiyuv of challah always goes according to when it was needed. So the Gemara says the must of Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says I have a contradiction from the din that we just learned over here about Ir HaNidachas. Maisa Sheni, the Kisra HaKodesh Yigonzu. We said that Maisa Sheni and holy writings that you find in the Ir HaNidachas have to be put in Gniza, have to be buried. Now, Ramai Askinan, what's the scenario we're talking about? Even with Yerushalayim, do we mean, where is this Maisa Sheni located? If it's located in Yerushalayim, and you're talking about that Yerushalayim itself became an Ir HaNidachas, can't me have your Ir HaNidachas? How can Yerushalayim itself become an Ir HaNidachas? Valtanya, we learn in a Braisa, Sodat Dvarim Nemru Yerushalayim, there are 10 dinim that are said about Yerushalayim that are listed in Baba Kama, Vizu Achas Mehan, and one of them is, Ein Anasis Ir HaNidachas, it can't become an Ir HaNidachas, because to become an Ir HaNidachas, it has to be, the Pasuk says, Ba'achas Arecha, Asher Hashem Elokecha, Noisim Lecha, one of your cities that Hashem gives you, implying that it was given to settle, Losheves Shem, to settle over there, as opposed to, the Gemara says over there, Yerushalayim L'Nischalka L'Shvatim, Yerushalayim was not really divided among the Shvatim, it's the common property of the whole Jewish people, therefore it can't become an Ir HaNidachas. So there are places actually where the Gemara says, we talked about yesterday, that at one point it was split between Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin, but whatever, when it became the site of the Bais HaMikdash, then for sure it became the common property of all the Shvatim. So Yerushalayim can never be an Ir HaNidachas, so you can't be talking about that the dough is in Yerushalayim, that the food of Maisa Sheni is in Yerushalayim. The El of the Ir HaCheres, you're talking about that the Maisa Sheni was in another city that did become an Ir HaNidachas va'askul agava, and they brought that food up to Yerushalayim, and then the city that it came from became an Ir HaNidachas. What's the problem? Of course you don't have to burn it. And you shouldn't have to put it in Gniza either. It was grabbed by the walls of Yerushalayim. Once it goes into the walls of Yerushalayim, you're not supposed to take it out of there. And you can't redeem it in Yerushalayim either. So why should we have to put it in Gniza? Why shouldn't we say once it comes to Yerushalayim, it has a new status and therefore it can be eaten? So Rabbi Yosef continues, Elalav Begvulin. Evidently, we have to be talking about that this Maisa Sheni was outside Yerushalayim and had not yet been brought to Yerushalayim, the Katani Yigonzu, and yet we're saying that it is put in Gniza. You don't burn it. So now the question is, if according to the mayor, if you're telling me Rav Chista, that you said before begvulim divrei hakol potter, that when you have dough that's outside Yerushalayim, you would always be potter from tchala from it because it's not considered yours at the time when it's needed. Well, by the same logic, it wouldn't be considered the property of the Ir HaNidachas, so there'd be no reason to have to put it in gniz at all, neither according to the mayor, nor according to the chachamim. It ought to be mutter to eat. Evidently, it must be that it is mamon hediyot, says Rabbi Yosef, is the implication. So therefore, and then, which explains, again, we don't want to be mezalzel in it to the extent of burning it, but at least we're going to put it in Gneza. So then that would contradict what you're telling us, Rav Chista, about taking challah from it. So the Gemara answers, loy, not necessarily, la'olam de'ir acheres. We could actually be talking about where it came from a different city outside Yerushalayim, v'askul agava, and that in fact we brought this Maisa Sheni food to Yerushalayim. You're asking that in that case it can never be taken outside Yerushalayim, kultur mechitzis, the walls have grabbed it, and now, the walls of Yerushalayim have changed its status, and now it never gets taken out. The answer is, v'hoch of Mayaskinen, shenitma, because we're talking about over here where it became tamei. So once it became tamei, then you can't eat it anymore, so now, therefore, the walls of Yerushalayim don't save it anymore. So they want to ask the Litrake, well, in that case, then, still, why do we need to put it in Gniza? We should be able to be put it, and then here, where it's Tomei, you could be put it even in Yerushalayim, and then you'll buy Tohar food with it, and it'll be eaten in Yerushalayim, and still, there'd be no reason to have to put it in Gniza. And we know Da'amar Rav Elazar, as in fact Rav Elazar says that even though normally you can't be poyda ma'aseh sheni in Yerushalayim, but you could when it became tamei. Da'amar Rav Elazar mean nine la ma'aseh sheni shenitma shapoyda osa afilu b'Yerushalayim. How do we know that if ma'aseh sheni becomes tamei, you redeem it even in Yerushalayim? Tamad loyma, because the pasuk says loy suchal se'esoi. You can't se'esoi. Now, in context, the pasuk means that you have so much ma'aseh sheni that you can't, you're too far from Yerushalayim, that you can't carry it se'esoi. Meloshen nosa, you can't carry it to Yerushalayim, and therefore Hashem gives you the alternative of being poydet and bringing the money to Yerushalayim, which is much less bulky, and then you'll buy food in Yerushalayim, etc. But Rav Elazar is saying that there's another meaning in the pasuk as well. The ein se'es ela achila. The word se'es refers to eating. Shenemar vayisa masos me'es panav, as we find by Yosef with his brothers, that he had portions of food distributed from in front of him to his brothers when they were eating together shortly before Yosef revealed himself to them, before the whole story with the goblet. So the point is, so now the pasuk is telling us two things. Ki yirchak mimcha makam, if you're too far away from Yerushalayim, or if kilo suchal se'esoi, if you can't eat it because it's tameh and you can't eat tameh ma'aseh sheni, then either way you're poyder. So, in our case of a year, again, the ma'aseh sheni has to, of necessity, be from another city. It can't be from Yerushalayim because Yerushalayim itself can't be an Ir Nidachas, but we're talking about that it's tameh. But still, why should you have to put it in the Geniza? Why shouldn't you be able to be poyder? The answer is, ha'chamayisken v'lakuach. Because we're talking about not the original food of Ma'aseh Sheni. We're talking about food that was bought with Ma'aseh Sheni money and is now located in Yerushalayim. So now the original food, you can be poyda. The food that you bought with Ma'aseh Sheni money, you cannot be poyda. So now, therefore, so you have no alternative but to put it in Geniza. Well, we want to ask still the Lifrike. Still, what do you mean? Maybe you could be poyda that. It's none, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah in Ma'aseh Sheni, halakuch bekesef Ma'aseh Sheni shenikma, halakuch bekesef Ma'aseh shenikma, something that was bought with Ma'aseh Sheni that became tamei. Yipoda, it can be redeemed. So there you go, it could be redeemed. So what's the problem? We're back to, let's redeem it, we'll buy other food with it, and that other food will be eaten in Yerushalayim rather than having to put anything in Geniza. And the answer is because the Braisa that we were talking about, on Mishnah, which is talking about that you have to, on Mishnah, that says that you have to put it in Geniza, Rabbi Yehuda, Da'amar Yukava, because our Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda, who disagrees in that Mishnah in Ma'aseh Sheni, and says that in such a case, it has to be burnt, and that it has to be buried. He says that no, you can only redeem the original Ma'aseh Sheni produce, not what you exchanged it for money, and then you use the money to buy food. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't redeem that anymore. Basically, Rashi explains that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the redeeming Ma'aseh Sheni with money and then using that money to buy food is not that process is not strong enough to give the money and the produce that was bought with it the original status of the Ma'aseh Sheni. So in effect, what you have here is something of a weaker status, which unlike the original Ma'aseh Sheni, which you could redeem, this you can't. So now, the only thing we can do, because it belonged to somebody from an Ir Nidachas, is put in Geniza. Well, the Gemara says, Yehochi my Iria Ir Nidachas, and in that case, why bother mentioning an Ir Nidachas after the Da'amanami? The same thing would apply to any Ma'aseh Sheni, to any food bought with money of Ma'aseh Sheni that became Tomei, you would have to put it in Geniza. You would have to bury it. And here we're saying, only from an Ir Nidachas. So the Gemara says, fine, you're right. Let's say that the case of the Ir Nidachas is talking about that the food was Tahar and was brought up to Yerushalayim, and then the city that it came from became an Ir Nidachas. So now, you're asking me, so what's the problem? Kulturu Mechitzis, the walls of Yerushalayim have now grasped it, and now it has a different status, and we shouldn't say Yigonzu anymore. The answer is, we can say that the case is talking about where after it was brought to Yerushalayim, the walls of Yerushalayim were knocked down. So now you can't eat Ma'aseh Sheni there anymore. So the Chiddur Rava, namely this explanation would be like what Rava says. The Amar Rava, Mechitza Lechel, the concept that you have to eat Ma'aseh Sheni within the walls of Yerushalayim, Daraisa. That concept is Daraisa. But the concept that the walls of Yerushalayim grab a hold of the food, and that now you can't take it out of there, and you can't redeem it anymore, that would be Dirabbanan. That concept is only Dirabbanan. Well, the chigozer rabbanon ki isnu l'mechitza. Now the chachamim make that zera only when the mechitzas are present. Ki lasnu l'mechitza loy, but not when the mechitzas, not when the walls have fallen down. So now he could take them out of Yerushalayim and be poyed to them. So now, therefore, if it comes from an irani dachas, then also since from anything from an irani dachas would have to be burnt. In this case, because it's ma'aseh sheni, we don't want to burn it, but nevertheless we're going to be goyneze it. So it comes out in short that the only way to make the din of our Mishnah work, that Yugonzu, would only be if it was brought into Yerushalayim, and then the walls of Yerushalayim were knocked down in order to make it work. With Rav Chisda's din, the only way would be if it was brought in Yerushalayim, then the walls were knocked down, and now at that point we're saying that it has to be put in Gnizah, as opposed to if the walls were still standing, then we would be saying that it could in fact be eaten because kol tuhu mechitzes. There was quite a bit of discussion about that. First of all, how exactly does kol tuhu mechitzes help us over here? The Ran explains basically because then it becomes like a pikadon, as we learned before that we have a pikadon that's being kept outside the city. So we said unless it can be brought back to the original city, then we said that unless nikbots in l'soicha, as we learned yesterday, whether we had one or possibly two explanations in Rashi, whether it meant that it's actually gathered back into the city, and whether it could be gathered back within a day or whatever, then we include it, and if not, then not. Well, here in Yerushalayim, since you can't take it out of there, therefore kultur mechitzis. On the other hand, though, the Ravid brings that actually this the words in the Gemara that we have over here, nofel mechitzis, actually the Ravid takes them out of the Gemara. He says that no, what we're saying is, that no, after all, Rava is explaining over here this concept of kultur mechitzes is only drabbanon. So how could it possibly affect a din daraisa about the irani dachas? So therefore, in other words, on a daraisa level, it would have been perfectly possible to take this food of ma'aseh sheni and bring it and take it outside Yerushalayim and take it to the irani dachas and burn it. And therefore, the fact that kultur mechitzes, being that whole concept is only drabbanon, doesn't help us as far as saving it completely. It only makes it that therefore you gunzu. The Ran discusses that point and then doesn't like the Ravid's explanation, but there is discussion back and forth among Achronim on details of that. And it is true when the Rambam brings this concept of Ma'aseh Sheni in connection with the Irani Dachas, he doesn't mention this point of Nofel Mechitzes either. It sounds like he learns more like the Ravid's explanation, that it means that regardless, once it was brought to Yerushalayim, then that's it. We can't take it, or again, Daraisa, you could have taken it out of Yerushalayim, but Drabbanon you can't, and therefore we put it in Gnizah.
Okay.
The Gemara goes on. We said in the Mishnah, Kisvei HaKodesh Yigonzu. We said that if there were any Kisvei HaKodesh in the Mishnah, then you put them in Gnizah. The Gemara says, Masnisin Deloik Rabbi Yezer. That means our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yezer. Now, our Mishnah is saying that if you have Kisvei HaKodesh over there, you don't burn them, but you don't save the city because of them either. On the other hand, the Tanya, Rabbi Yezer Oymer, Kol Ir Sheyesh Ba'afilu Mezuzah Achas. Rabbi Yezer says that if the city has one single mezuzah in it, Ein Anasas, Ir Anidachas, then that alone saves it, and the whole thing cannot become an irani dachas. As the Torah says, you should burn the entire city completely in fire with all of its possessions. Now, if you have a mezuzah, you can't, because you're not allowed to destroy names of Hashem. Because the pasuk says, "Like Sasan came, Hashem alekeichem." You burn and destroy everything of Avodah Zarah, but you don't do that to Hashem. From which we learn that you're not allowed to destroy names of Hashem or destroy objects that have kedusha. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to say that's not a problem. It just means you put the Kisra Kodesh in Gniza, and you say you basically the Yad Ramah explains the Chachamim take the view of something called Heichad Efsher Efsher Heichad Lo Efsher Lo Efsher. Listen, where you're able to be Mekayim in the mitzvah, then you do that. Where you can't be Mekayim it because here there's an Isra of Loisas and Kain, then fine, you put these Kisra Kodesh in Gniza, but that doesn't prevent you from burning the whole city. Whereas Rebbe Eliezer is going to hold, since you can't burn them, and then if you're not burning them, then you're not Mekayim as a Irves Kol Shlala, then therefore he says the whole city becomes potter. An interesting point that Be'er Sheva says, why do we mention Davka Mezuzah? Why not mention Kisra Kodesh? Why not mention Tfilin? He says, listen, these people are worshipping Avodah Zarah. They're not necessarily going to be wearing Tfilin. They don't necessarily have Kisra Kodesh. But they may still put a mezuzah on their door because they want the protection of Hashem from it. They still, somewhere in the back of their mind, they have in mind that Hashem protects through the mezuzah, and therefore they put that up. So Rabbi Eliezer is saying that that's enough to save the whole city. Achronim discussed actually in some detail what about the fact of, why don't we say Eser Dolchalos Eser, the Eser of Rabbi Akiva Eger brings up the point over here, the Teres Chaim brings up the point, and actually, first of all, the Gemara had mentioned earlier in the Masechta that that's why we said that there was an opinion in a Braisa that said the concept of an Eir Nidachas, that whole scenario never actually happened and never will happen, and the reason is because where are you ever going to find an entire city of Jews where they don't have one single mezuzah? And according to, so that was according to Rabbi Yezer, then this whole thing never happened and never will happen. So now, a number of the Achronim talk about, why don't we say Eser Dolchalos Eser, that the Eser burning the Eir Nidachas should override the lois eser of not destroying Hashem's name. So you actually have Reb Moshe brings in his Shuvas in one place. You see from this that maybe this concept of eser dochalo, the Gemara mentions in Zvachim that we don't say eser dochalo eser when it comes to things of kodshim. So he says maybe not just kodshim, maybe also this concept of erasing or destroying things of kedusha, things of Hashem's name. Maybe also eser is not dochalo eser in that case. And then you have there are achronim who talk about the idea that destroying Hashem's name is not just a lois eser of lois sas and kain. There's also you're violating, person is violating an eser of es Hashem alakech hatira, and as we know, an eser can't override a lois eser and an eser together. So there's a few different reasons, and various other points. The Meshech Chochmah actually says an interesting thing. He says that first of all, the whole concept of Lo Sasum Kein Hashem Alekechem is referring precisely to an Eir Nidachas. So therefore, so you can't say you should make an exception because that's exactly the context he says in which the Torah is saying it. Yeah, it would be a circular thing. In fact, by the way, the Meshech Chochmah says a cute thing in this. He says, you know, in Vahoyah and Shemaya, we say, l'man yubu yamechem. What does a mezuzah have to do with long life? That's what he, and why over here do we have and we have the psukim before that, the limadtam oisam as b'neichem is in plural, whereas uchsavtam is in singular. Singular should write it. So he says that's what it means. One person, one individual person in a city writes himself a mezuzah, and now he makes that his life and the lives of all the people of the city are spared and are lengthened because of the one mezuzah that he wrote. So the pasuk would be hinting at Rabbi Eliezer's din. The fact is, the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, though, and the halacha is like the chachamim that we just put those mezuzahs in Gniza and burn the rest of the city. Next, the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Shimon Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'chola. Rabbi Shimon had said that Hashem is saying that he wants you to destroy the city. Why do we burn even the Nechasim of Tzaddikim? Rabbi Shimon had said because they were in the city and they were in the, here Hashem said actually in the Mishnah that if you punish the Eir Nidachas, then I consider it as though you brought a korban to me, as though you brought a korban oila, which is why the pasuk used the word kolil, and then the Mishnah had gone on to mention a machlokas Rabbi Yisrael Gwili and Rabbi Akiva whether you can't rebuild the city with houses for sure, because the pasuk says v'hoisa tel oila moisi bana oid, but could you rebuild it as gardens and parks and things like that? Rabbi Yisrael Gwili held that no, and Rabbi Akiva held yes. So the Gemara says, Lema b'dirab oven amrab ila kamifagi. Should we say that they're arguing on the logic that Rab Oven says in the name of Rab Ila, whether we accept it or not? The amrab oven amrab ila kol mokum shata moitze klal eser pratlois klal be'eser or prat belois eser. Now we know that you darshan the Torah with klal or prat, but if you find that the klal is within an eser and the prat is given in a lois eser, Ein Donanosi v'klala prat. Then Reb Oven says that you don't count such a thing as a klala prat. It has to be that both of them are in connection with a lav, or both of them are in an eser. Now, here we have, the Torah says, v'hoisa tel olam, it should be a heap of ruins forever, that's an eser, and then it continues, loisi bona oid, it should never again be rebuilt, meaning with houses, which is a lois eser. Now, if we were to judge it as klal prat, we would say, ein b'klal ela masha prat. So we would say, therefore, it means loisi bona oid, it can't be rebuilt as a city, but it can be rebuilt as something else, as orchards or gardens or what have you. But if we say that, if we don't learn it as a klal prat, then it would mean separate, then it would mean two separate things. It means you can't rebuild it even to make gardens or parks out of it. And lo sibana oid, you can't even, it has to be a heap of ruins forever, that it can't be parks or gardens, and lo sibana oid would also mean that it can't mean that either. So in other words, we would just say that there'd be an esse and a lois esse involved in making parks or gardens over there. So Rashi actually brings two explanations of what we mean over here. So first Rashi explains that that's what we mean. If we said it was a klal of prat, then it would mean that the klal is don't build it at all. Leave it as a ruin forever. Therefore, would be a prat, which modifies it and says only the prat is you can't rebuild it as a city, but you can build it as parks and gardens. But if you were to say that it's not a klal of prat, then you would say that if a person makes it parks or gardens, he's over on an eser or a lois eser. Then you have in Rashi lishnachrina, you have another loshen in Rashi. Although the Marshal changes the Girsa in Rashi and says it's not supposed to be lishnachrina, but loy, in which case it's not two explanations in Rashi, it's one continuous explanation. Rashi goes on to say then that we might say that Rabbi Yosef really doesn't hold like Rabbi Oven that you can't dash in it. So therefore he would be saying v'hoisa tel olam, you leave it as a ruin forever, meaning that you can't do anything with it. Loy sibana oid means it's not only that you can't build houses, you can't even build parks or orchards over there. So whether these are actually two explanations in Rashi or whether these are one explanation is going to depend on the Girsa of the Marshal. Marshal also discusses this over here and says if you're telling me that you have a klal over here and that you can't build it at all, and then you're going to mention specifically houses in the second Lashon, meaning you can't do anything which is going to be useful for people, then automatically Ganes and Pardesim would also be included because they're also useful for people. And if you're going to say that you only have an essay in there, then what do you mean? Then why do we need to say that we have Yotzim and a Klal Lamed? So that's why Maharshal says that no, not like the Maharshal, we're talking about one continuous explanation. We are in fact talking two explanations in Rashi, like we have Lishnachrina. So therefore, going to Rashi's first explanation, again, what we're saying is, that Rabbi Yossi Aglili would disagree with this concept that you don't judge it as a, would agree rather with this concept that you don't judge it as a klal of prat, rather you judge it as two separate statements. One tells us you can't build it, and one tells us leave it ruined, and if not, then you're over on an essa, and the other one tells us if you do build it, then you're also over on a lois essa, and the other explanation would be basically that it's davar shahayim and a klal, davar shahayim a klal, v'yotzim and a klal lalamed, that it teaches us not only you can't build it as houses, but you can't build it as anything useful for people. So you would say that they're arguing whether we accept that point. Mar is the Dirabovin or Mar less the Dirabovin. So it would come out then that Rabbi Yosef really agrees with Rabbi Ovin that you don't judge it as a klal of prat, therefore you can't build anything over there. Omar, less the Rabbi Ovin, whereas Rabbi Akiva would not hold it of Rabbi Ovin, he would hold that it is a klal of prat, and therefore that you can say the klal is don't build it at all, the prat is don't build it as houses, lo sibana oid, but you could rebuild it as something else. So would that be the machlokas? So the Gemara says no, loy, not necessarily. Dekol Alma Islahu de Rav Ovin, both of them may agree with Rav Ovin. And therefore that you have that this is not a klal of prat. The machlokas is just what does the word oid mean? Mar Sava Oid Lagamri Mash. My Rabbi Yosef Aglieri says Oid means don't rebuild it at all in any way. Well, Mar Sava, Rabbi Akiva holds, L'kamasha Hoysa in a Nivnes. You can't rebuild it as it was, a city with houses. Aval Nasasi Ganesa Pardesim, but you could build it as gardens and orchards, because that's not the same as it was. So yes, it's not a Klal of Prat, but the question is just what the word Oid means in this connection. And according to the other explanation in Rashi, we would say that it's not a matter of davar shehoy b'chlal v'yotzei min ha'klal l'lamed. It's just a matter of what the word oyed itself means. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Hoyer ba ilonis tlushin. If there were in the city, if there were trees that were already detached from the ground, so then asurin and they're also b'hanah, and they have to be burnt together with the rest of the city. Mechuborin, but if they're still attached to the ground, mutorin, then they would be mutter, on the basis, Rashi explains, we learned yesterday in the Gemara, that you need to have tikvots v'sarafta. It has to be, in order for it to be chayev, to be burnt, it has to be something that you could gather to, all you need to do is gather it and burn it. In this case, you would also need to chop it down first, and then gather it and burn it, and therefore the Torah is memai, that's not included. Shal iracheres, but if the trees belong to another city, Bain Tlushin, Bain Mechuborin, also, whether they're attached to the ground or whether not, then they're also Ba'na. The Gemara says, my Iracheres, what do you mean another city? Amar Rav Chista Yerichoi. So Rav Chista says, when we say over here another city, we mean the city of Yerichoi, which is not truly an Ir Nidachas, but in a way was treated like one, because when the Jewish people conquered it, they burnt the city, and Yeshua announced everything in it is off limits, v'hoysa Ir Chedem, and that it should never be rebuilt. So in effect, Yeshua treated it like an Ir Nidachas.
So
we're saying that if you have trees, So in other words, the Braisa wants you to know, unlike with an Irani Dachas, where if there were any trees in it that are attached to the ground, they remain Mutar Bahana, in the case of Yerichoi, that would not be the case, and in the case of Yerichoi, you would actually have to destroy those cities as well. The whole concept that you're not allowed to rebuild, that the Gemara is going to discuss now, this whole concept that you're not allowed to rebuild Yerichoi and there's a curse on it, whatever, the poskim don't bring that din, because as the Gemara is going to point out soon, Chiel, well, in the times of Eliyahu, Navi was over on it and built the city. Okay, we're going to discuss whether he actually built Yerichoi or a different city named Yerichoi or whatever, but once he did, then it became Mutter and you were allowed to rebuild it after that. We find later on in the times of Elisha, we find that there were Bnei HaNevi'im, there were Talmidim of Elisha living in Yerichoi, so evidently even though he did it in a way that's also, nevertheless afterwards it became Mutter. So should dichtiv, because the pasuk says v'hoisa yuchedim l'Hashem, the whole city should be chedim for Hashem. So therefore, that means even the trees attached to the ground in Yerichoi become osur. Practically speaking, with the Irani Dachas or with Yerichoi, if the city is burnt, you're not going to get much use out of the trees that are attached to the ground anyhow. But I guess the burnt trunks of them might remain, and you could use them for charcoal or something. So therefore, in the case of an Irani Dachas, that would be fine. But in the case of Yerichoi, you couldn't. Let's talk about these dinim of Yerichoi and the whole story with that. The pasuk says, "Vayashva Yeshua ba'esahi lemer." Yeshua beswore the people on that day, saying, "Oro ish lifnei Hashem." Cursed in front of Hashem is the person asher yokum uvoner se'ir azois, who will arise and rebuild the city as Yerichoi. Bivchora yiyasdena, with his firstborn he will found it. Meaning, as the Gemara is going to explain, it means that when he starts building it, his firstborn son will die. Or with tzira yasiv dloseha, and with his youngest son he will set up its gates. When he finishes the job of building the city, if he hasn't done tshuva, then he still does that. Then his youngest son will die. So, why does it say Seir Hazois Es Yerichoi? Why the double expression? So the Gemara explains, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Lo Yerichoi, Al Shem Ir Acheres. Not only you're not allowed to rebuild the city of Yerichoi, and even if you give it a different name, Lo Ir Acheres, Al Shem Yerichoi, and you're also not allowed to build another city and call it Yerichoi. In other words, we want that the name of Yerichoi should be completely erased from the world. One thing is, also Mephoshim point out, as far as rebuilding the city itself, even calling it a different name, one thing is, like this, you have the walls of Yerichoi sank into the ground, and it was a tremendous mess. So therefore, if the city is rebuilt, then they're going to be overbuilding over that area, and you're not going to see the nest anymore, and therefore Yeshua didn't want them to do that. So the Gemara says, and we know that Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says in Malachim, B'yamav, in his times, in the times of Achav, Bona Chiel Beis El Yes Yerichoi, Chiel from Beis El built Yerichoi. In the simple sense, Beis El means that he came from the city of Beis El. Although there is an explanation, I think the Rashami over here says it, I don't remember, but somebody says that Beis El also literally means from the cursed house, Eli Malachim Olah. So actually, because as we're saying, that his family was cursed. Actually, the Rishami does mention an interesting thing in this connection. The Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim mentions a number of sons of Yehoshaphat, and one of them is named Yechiel. The Rishami equates that with the Chiel of our Pasuk over here. So he's unlike his father Yehoshaphat, who was a tzaddik, he was a Rosha and he rebuilt the city. And the Gemara even asks over there that, wait a minute, Yericho is in the territory of Binyamin. Isn't that in the territory of Yehoshaphat? Yehuda and Binyamin belong to King Yehoshaphat. The rest of Eretz Yisrael belongs to Achav. So why are we saying over here, why are we attributing it in Achav's times, especially if it's a son of Yehoshaphat, but in any case, it's in Yehoshaphat's territory that it's being done? And the answer is basically because Achav is a Rosha, so therefore everything that's being done in that time is attributed, anything bad that's being done in that time is being attributed to him. So the pasuk says in those days Chiyo Beis Eli built Yerichoi ba'aviram b'chore Yisra with his eldest son Aviram, he founded it, meaning that when he founded the city, then his eldest son Aviram died. And with his youngest Zguv, he set up the gates. So the point of that is. This point actually that we're saying Beis Eli means from the cursed household, Rashi actually brings it over here that Beis Eli is because he was over on the Ola, on the Shavua of Yericho, and therefore he's called Beis Eli. Anyway, the point is now Chiel didn't actually build the city of Yericho. He built a different city and named it Yericho. Rashi explains, I don't know where we get that from. Why don't we say that he built the actual city of Yericho? And again, it points out Yerushalmi that we just said, it would seem that in fact it definitely was the city of Yericho. However, Mephoshim point out that in the Pasuk you have a Kriuksiv. The name of the city is spelt over there, Yericho with a hey. Usually Yericho is Yud Reish, maybe a Yud in there, maybe not, Ches Vov, and here it's spelled Yud Ches Yud Reish He. So therefore, the Gemara is understanding from that it wasn't the same city, but rather a different city that he named by that name Yericho. And even that, he did a variation of the name by doing a He instead of the Vov. We also have, the fact is, we're saying over here that there were two different Isurim, one to not build Yericho itself, and one to not build another city named Yericho. So that's why the Gemara is doubting over here when we say that he built Yericho. Again, if we're saying that Es Ha'ir Azoi means this city, no matter what you call it, and Es Yericho means another city, so now if it says B'yama, B'anachio B'se'eli, Es Yericho, then it means that he built another city, and named Yericho. And nevertheless, his children died. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in Braisa, Aviram b'chorei Rosha, loy hoya loy lilmud, when Aviram, who was the eldest son of Chiel, and he himself, Aviram was also a Rosha, when he died, fine, you could say loy hoya loy lilmud, then his father couldn't have yet derived from that, that he shouldn't be building the city, because you could say it happens, and because his son himself is a Rosha. But at least by the time it came to his youngest son, Seguv, even if Seguv himself was a Rosha as well, he should have by that time learned and realized that he's being punished for rebuilding the city, and he should have stopped. The Gemara says, Aviram and Seguv, my Ovid, my karma. What do you mean? Why are we calling Aviram and Seguv Rishoyim? We don't have any evidence that they were Rishoyim. The answer is, Hochi karma. You're right. What the Braisa means, Ba'aviram b'choroi, hoyol elumud lo'ose rosha. Aviram, the eldest, already that rosha, Chiel, should have learned that there's something wrong over here. He should have realized that his son dying is not just some random thing. This is the beginning of the fulfillment of Yeshua's curse, and therefore he should have stopped right there. Even we're saying he was building another city, even he was naming it a slightly different name, etc. He should have realized he can't get away with such loopholes. At least by the time that Skuv dies, he should realize that even by the time Aviram dies, he should realize that in the future his son Skuv and all the sons in between are going to die unless he does tshuva and stops this. And the fact that he didn't means that we have reason to consider him guilty. Why didn't he learn his lesson sooner? So that's the point of the pasuk stressing that Aviram b'chore and Skuv is to tell us, in other words, this point that he should have been realizing by this time that there's something wrong and stopped his project. So the Gemara says, now, once we say in the Pasuk, let's continue Darshan in that Pasuk, once we say that Aviram was his eldest, isn't it obvious that Skuv was his youngest? Because that's how it goes, in other words. So this is not, Rashi explains, this is a separate Drasha. Why does it have to mention the word Se'iroi by Skuv? Ela malamet shahoyah makaber v'holich me'aviram v'ad Skuv. It means that Chiyo was going in order, and that each one was dying in his turn. So, in other words, the pasuk is saying that in other words, like this. Without that, you would have thought he had only two children, Aviram and Skuv. No, he had lots of children. But he started by building the city, and Aviram died, and then he continued, and his next son died, and still continued, and the next son died after that.
As the project was going on.
So therefore he should have realized that something is wrong over here. The Aruch HaNer also points out they died in order of age. That should also have been a signal to him that this is not something that's just happening random. This is obviously something min hashamayim. Nevertheless, we're saying that he was such a rasha that he didn't take a lesson from that either. Well, the Gemara continues with the next part of the story. Achav Shushvin Ehava. Now, Achav was a good friend of Chiel. Well, Shushvin, we actually learned in Bava Basra, as part of the mutual aid society where they help each other get married and attend each other's weddings, but more generally in the Gemara, it also means a very close friend. So Achav was a good friend of Chiel. Also, Ihu ve'Eliyahu, the Mishra b'Shlomo Beit Tamia. So now, he and Eliyahu both went to go be Menachem Ovel Chiel for the deaths of his children.
So one second.
Acha was going because he was his friend. Eliyahu will explain in a second. First of all, what is this word Beit Tamia? Rashi says now Tamia is Meloshin Avil. So Beit Tamia would be the place of the Avelus. Rashi brings a Girsa. The word is not Beit Tamia, but Beit Tama. Tama meaning a taste. That people, they give him tasty and comforting words to comfort him. There's a different explanation that's brought elsewhere, that Beit Tama means it would be the place where you would start the conversation by saying, Tama, what is the reason that this happened? And then that would lead into the conversation where they would be talking about to be Menachem Ovel. Achav, we understand why he's going. Why is Eliyahu going? So actually, the Maharal points out that maybe Eliyahu was Danim Makaf Schus. Again, given that it wasn't the actual Yericha itself, as we said before, it was a different city, and he changed the name and put a hey instead of a vav. Maybe you could be Danim Makaf Schus. He didn't realize that this is also included in the Isser. So therefore, maybe he's not such a Rosha that you can't be Menachem Ovel. The Medrash actually says that Hashem told him to go be Menachem Ovel, and when Eliyahu says, why should I? He's a Rosha, then Hashem, and whatever they say over there is just going to get me angry, then Hashem tells him, fine, I'm giving it to you, I'm giving it up, I'm leaving it up to you to punish them with whatever you see fit, as we'll see in the continuation of the story. So they went to be Menachem Ovel. Yosef Akama, so now Achav, as we learned earlier in the Perek, Achav, even though he was a great Rosha, he was also a Talmid Chacham. He was also an outstanding Talmud Chacham, as we learned. He was learning Sefer. He was learning many different pshatim throughout his kingship in Sefer Vayikra. So Yosef Akamar. So he was sitting and saying, Duma ki mevat liyeshua hachi lot. Maybe when Yeshua made this curse on anybody who rebuilds Yericho, maybe it included, in fact, yeah, lo Yericho Hashem iracheres, not to rebuild Yericho even with a different name, the lo iracheres Hashem Yericho, and not another city named Yericho, and maybe that's now why Chiyo was punished. He didn't build Yericho. He built a different city, but nevertheless, maybe that's reason enough to trigger Yeshua's klala. Amalei Eliyahu Ein. So Eliyahu says, yes, that is so. But Achav says, I don't believe it. Look at this. Moshe's curse has not been Mekoyim. Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, which Moshe dictated the Torah, Moshe wrote the Torah for us at Hashem's dictation. And he says in Kriyashma, you're going to turn away and worship other gods than Hashem Bachem, then Hashem. And Hashem, the pasuk continues, V'choraf Hashem b'chem, Hashem's anger will flare against you, V'otzer es ha-shamayim, and it'll stop up the heavens, V'goymer. Meanwhile, V'ahu gavra, that person, meaning I, Ukim le'avodas kechavim, I'll tell him, v'tell him, I've set up avodas zaras on every furrow in Eretz Yisrael, every place where they would plow, and they would have a harvest from it, they would put avodas zaras there to thank the God of whatever that they believe in, that he fertilized the earth and made it fruitful.
When he did it, he wasn't doing that, like, he believed in Hashem, he was doing it because he's a helper.
That, nevertheless, it's still Avodah Zarah, and it's still also, and the Pasuk is still saying, the Sautim Vavadim. So, and Achav says, you want to know how much rain there is? And yet, sometimes it rains so much that I can't go worship my Avodah Zarah. So Moshe's Klala says Achav is not coming true at all. That Levatza the Yeshua Talmidim Akaima. So you're telling me that the Klala of Yeshua has already come true, where Yeshua is only a Talmud of Moshe? Can't be logical. Must be that's just a random thing.
Wow.
Yeah, I could a person can
then to help come to help him.
So, why was that? Marsha explains, listen.
Hashem has patience.
Hashem has patience. There's a lot of reasons. He says that there's the one reason is, because Hashem has patience. But Marsha says another point as well. This is all part of Vavadta Mehera, Me'al Aretz HaTova. Now, earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara pointed out that Hashem's timetable is much longer than ours. And when Hashem says Mehera, doesn't necessarily mean right away. In this case, it took 850-odd years from when they came into Eretz Yisrael until the Chorban Bayis Rishon. Therefore, it doesn't mean that it has to happen right away.
Now, also had then during that time they got along to one another.
Who, the two kingdoms?
No, during that 800 years.
You're talking about did they have Eretz Yisrael? Sometimes not. But yeah, the point
before
the
Chorban.
Before Chorban Bayis Sheni, that's in Eschina. I'm not talking about that yet. Anyway, so that's one point. There's other points as well. The Sanhedrin Tana points out that Yeshua's Klala is on a Yochid, whereas Moshe's is on the Rabbim, and then the Rabbim have more Zchusim. After all, not everybody there wasn't worshipping Avodah Zarah. Another point is also Yeshua made a Shvua, Moshe didn't. So there are reasons why it should be that way, but nevertheless, Achav is using it as an excuse to claim that it was all random. So, Miyad, when Eliyahu hears this, then he got, Vayomer Eliyahu Atishvi Miteshav Gilad, Eliyahu Atishvi, this is the first place in Tanakh where he's being introduced, Mitishvi means that he came from a town called Toshav, Miteshav Gilad, from the residence of Gilad, he says, Chai Hashem Alekei Yisrael, as Hashem, the God of Israel, lives, Im Yia Talumotar, the most paraphrasing, the Pasuk actually has more words in it, but whatever, if there's going to be, during these next few years, if there's going to be rain or dew, only if I say so. So he's swearing that there's not going to be that there's not going to be any rain or dew for the next couple of years. Now the pasuk doesn't say what triggered that, but Rashi explains because that pasuk is right after the one about Chiel. The one about Chiel building Yericha and his children dying is the last pasuk of Malachim Aleph Perek Tes Zayin. This pasuk about Eliyahu saying that there won't be rain is the first pasuk of Perek Yud Zayin. The Perokim themselves were divided up by the Goyim, but the point is it's one pasuk after another. Therefore, the Gemara's understanding what triggered what caused Eliyahu to say that was what had been said in Chiel's house. So it all led to that. So what did he do? Boi Rachmi, Davin for Rachmanis from Hashem, Vahovale Aklida the Mitra, and he was given the key of rain. So now he has the control over the rain, become Va'ozel, and then he left. He stopped the rain and then he left. So now the pasuk says, "Vayhi dvar Hashem elav lemer." Hashem then speaks to Eliyahu and tells him, "Leich mizeh, leave here, ufonisa l'chol kedma, go to the east side of Eretz Yisrael, v'nistarta b'nachal Kris." Then you should hide out in the valley by the stream of Kris, and there you'll have water because the stream will provide you water. And the pasuk says, ravens were bringing him bread and meat every morning and every evening. So the Gemara says, Mehecha, where are they getting this bread and meat from? And the answer is, Amar Rav Yehuda Amarav, mi beit tabchi de Achav. They were bringing it from Achav's kitchens. Ravens would fly there every day and grab food and bring it to Achav, and bring it to Eliyahu, hiding there in Nachal Kris.
We're going to get a kosher kitchen.
Ah, so the Gemara in Cholin discusses the point that now, if an Ovid Avodah Zarah, Shecht, is his Shechita Mutter. So the Gemara brings over there, on the face of it, from here we have a proof that yes, Achav, and we would assume his Meshosim were Ovid Avodah Zarah, and yet Eliyahu was able to eat their meat. So there's a couple of possibilities. The Gemara says over there, first of all, that it may have been Alpia Dibur. There may have been a special heter that Hashem gave Eliyahu under these circumstances to eat that meat, even if normally it would be Osir. So in other words, Rashi actually explains there in Chulin that it would mean it was a Haras Shah that Hashem told him, eat this meat, even though you don't know who shechted it in Achav's kitchens. The Ritva actually explains over there, the Gemara also explains that you had Ovadia was working for Achav. He was Asher Alabois, he was Achav's chief of staff. And the Gemara establishes over there, we know he was a tzaddik, we know he was a Navi even, and the Gemara establishes that when Achav had to serve food that was unquestionably kosher, for example, to Yehoshaphat, then he would have Ovadia shecht it. So in the same way over here, Hashem made sure that the meat that's being served, that's being brought to Eliyahu, would be from what Ovadia shechted. So therefore, no problem with it.
Well, right.
Rabbi Yaakov Emden also points out, the fact is, the halacha is that when a bird of prey grabs meat like that, then you have yish. The original owner doesn't expect to get it back from the bird. Therefore, it's not considered stealing either. It's considered he got it from Hefker, basically. We have famously, you know, Rashi mentions on in Parshas Noach, when Noach sends out the raven and it refuses to go, and Noach doesn't even want to let it back into the teva. Who needs ravens in the world? Then Hashem tells him one day there's going to be a drying up of the water in the earth, and the ervim, the ravens, are going to be helping out Eliyahu there. So therefore, yes, Hashem has plans for them. There is also, though, it does talk about that. Why did Hashem have him have his food brought through ravens? Was Hashem wanted to hint to him? Ravens are always a symbol of cruelty. Livnei Odev Asher Yikro, we say in davening, because baby ravens are born a different color than their parents, and their parents refuse to feed them. They don't recognize them as their own children, and Hashem provides for the babies until they're old enough. So the raven is always a symbol of cruelty. So Hashem is hinting to Eliyahu, you're being a little too cruel, you're being a little too harsh on the Jewish people with this gzeira of yours to not have rain. Go easy on them. But Eliyahu is not taking the hint. So the pasuk continues. Vayhi miketz yomim, time passed. Vayivash hanochal, the stream dried up. Ki lo hayo geshem ba'aretz, because there was no rain in the earth. And that was also Hashem was doing that. Rashi brings on the pasuk over there again to hint to him. Come on, it's time to give up the key and let rain fall. Still, he's not getting it. Kibin dechaz de ikat sayra ba'alma. So now Hashem sees there's tsar in the world, and he's trying to force Eliyahu into a situation where he's going to have to give back the key to rain.
He can just tell him straightforward enough.
He could, but tzadik goes, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim, so Hashem doesn't want to openly go against what Eliyahu said, especially Hashem, according to that medrash before, Hashem had told him, you can tell them whatever you want, so therefore Hashem has to kind of manipulate him into giving the key back. So, Siv, the pasuk continues, Vayhi dvar Hashem elav lemer, Hashem says to Eliyahu, Kum lech Tzorfasa, go to the city of Tzorfas, in the north of Eretz Yisrael, and there'll be an Amon over there who will provide you food. Uchtiv, so she does, she has very little food of her own, but she gives a little to Eliyahu, and Hashem gives, and then Eliyahu gives her a bracha, that her flour and her oil will never run out, as long as he's staying by her. Then the pasuk says, Uchtiv, the pasuk continues, Vayhi achar advarma elach chola bena isha balas abayis, the son of this woman, the mistress of the household, became very sick. So, in fact, she goes and confronts Eliyahu, what are you doing? Until now, I was the tzaddikus in town. Now you came to town, and compared to you, I look like a rishas, and maybe that's why Hashem is punishing me. So Eliyahu realizes he has a responsibility to be mechayim mason, this kid. So, Eliyahu is davening to Hashem, l'mitin le'achludin, t'chias ha'mesim, to give him the key of t'chias ha'mesim, so he can revive the child. Amrile, he was told min hashamayim, now, sholosh mafteches lo nimsiru l'shliach. There were three keys in Shemayim that were never given over to a shliach. Hashem himself keeps them with himself and decides when these things are going to happen. Shochaya, when a woman gives birth, the Shoshamim, and of rain, the Shochiasamesim. All these three things are under Hashem's direct control. He doesn't even make them happen. He doesn't delegate them and make them happen through a malach. In Tainus, the Gemara mentions Psukim, from which we see all of those. The Gemara mentions another one over there in Tainus called Mafteach Shoparnosa. The Gemara brings a fourth one. Another opinion says that Parnosa is included in Shoshamim. We mention all four of those actually in the Baruch HaAtagibur. Atagir Elohim Hashem, Mechaya Mesim Ata, that's Tchias Mesim, Mashiva Ruach, Omer Uda Geshem, is rain, Mechal Kochayim Bechesed, is Tchias Mesim, and Matir Asurim refers to childbirth, where the child was imprisoned in the womb, and now he's brought out. It's also brought an interesting thing. I think the Avudraham says the acronym of these four things, Motor, Parnosa, Tchia, and Choya, spells out Machteach. Spells out the very word key. Anyway, but the Gemara over here was saying there's three. In Tainus, the Gemara mentions the possibility that there's four, because maybe Parnosa is separate. Anyway, so there are three such keys. Yoimru, people are going to say, if I give you the key to Tchias Mesim, Shtayim b'yad Talmud v'achas b'yad Arav, that Hashem is keeping only one, and the Talmud, you, Elio, have two? No, I see her, bring back the key of rain, the shokel high, and then you can get the key of Tchias Mesim. So I'll make you a trade. So that's how Hashem is manipulating him into giving back the key. Dichtiv, as you find, after Eliyahu revives the child, which it says, by the way, it's brought in Midrashim that child grew up to be Yonah Anavi. So afterwards, Hashem tells him, Leichei Roel Achav, Ve'etnamotu, go appear to Achav, and I will send rain. So what's the connection? Is because in order, the price for being Mechaya Mason, this child, in gratitude to his hostess, who had taken him in and given him food, is that they should give back the key to rain. So now it's up to Hashem to bring rain. So and that's when you had the whole thing on Har HaKarmel, and shortly after that, rain fell. With the Nevi Abal and with the fire coming down from Shemayim. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Dorosh Ahu Grila, Kamedin of Chista, a person from the Galil, one time the Talmud from the Galil gave a drosha in front of a Chista, Moshe d'Eliyahu, the Ma'ad d'Avadoyma, this story with Eliyahu, where he had the key of Tchias Mesim, of rain, and then he was forced to give it back, and he thought that it's going to be completely under his control to determine when rain's going to fall, and in the end he had to give it back. What is it like? David Tauke Legale, a person locked his door, V'abde L'mastachay, and then he lost the key. So he thinks he can open the door at any time, but he doesn't realize that he lost the key, and now he can't open the door anymore. So the same way, in other words, that Eliyahu thought the whole thing is going to be under his control, and in the end it turns out that not, because he had to give the key back to Hashem. Mausher points out that Moshel is not exactly like the Nimshel, because he didn't lose the key and to return it to Hashem. But still, he had said, Lafi Dvori, it's going to be completely based on my words, that I'm going to be the one who determines when it rains again, when I decide the Jewish people have done tshuva enough, and now it's not, so now he has to return it. And it wasn't Al Yadai, so therefore it can be considered as though he lost the key. Then Yehoyada further goes and adds by it that, listen, when you say you lost the key, after all, it doesn't mean that you yourself, it doesn't mean that it's gone from the world. It just means you don't know. It doesn't mean you don't know where it is. It's in somebody else's rishus. So to say, imagine, for example, he says you locked your door, you went out, and then you dropped the key back through a hole or a window or something. It's inside the chotzer. So it's there. So anybody in the chotzer can reopen it, but you can't reach it. So the same way over here, he had the power to stop the rain, but he's outside Shemayim because he's on the earth. The power of rain is in Shemayim. So now it's as though he lost the key. In other words, as though he dropped it back into Shemayim, and therefore Hashem has it, and Hashem is the one who takes it back, and he's the one who determines when the Shemayim are going to be open and rain is going to fall. The Gemara continues, Dorosh Rav Yossi v'Tzipori. Rav Yossi one time gave a drosha in the city of Tzipori, where, as we learned a few dafim ago, Rav Yossi lived there. He was the Rav there. So he one time gave a drosha. Abba Eliyahu, father Eliyahu, he wasn't his father, but Rashi says, Chavivi Ugdoli, my dear friend, and the one who's very great to me.
Who's calling him
that? Rav Yossi is calling him that. Captain Hoya. He was a captain. He's a person who gets angered very easily, that we see he got angry at Achav and stopped rain for all those years because of that. In other words, he's saying that Eliyahu should have had more patience with him. Now, have a regular Mesa Gabe. Up till that point, Eliyahu was regularly visiting Rav Yossi. Ich siminet, tlossi yoimi, v'loyosa. Now, Eliyahu stayed away for 3 days and didn't show up. Ki osa, when Eliyahu came back, omalei Rav Yossi asked him, amai la osimar, Rebbe, why didn't you come all this time, these last few days? Amalekah, Leo says, Captain Cursley, you called me a captain. I don't want to be around you if you're going to call me names. Amalekah, said Rabbi Yossi, says, hard to come on to Kofid Marav. Look at this. We see from this very thing itself that you're a captain, that I called you a name, and therefore you're makbid, and you're makbid on it, and because of that, you're away for 3 days. So you see, I have very good reason to call you a captain, because you are. You're a captain, and you actually did. When I said this to you, then you stayed away for 3 days.
You only called him a captain after he didn't come for 3 days.
No, it's not fair. You called him a captain, and then he didn't come for 3 days.
Oh.
So he's saying that now. So the Torah Chaim points out, in other words, there is a good thing to be makbid for the covet of Hashem. That's what Eliyahu said about when Eliyahu said to Achav and to Chiel that I'm going to stop the rain because of the way you're talking against Moshe Rabbeinu and against Hashem. Then fine, it's a valid thing to do that. But so now Eliyahu is arguing, I have good reason to have that midah. What are you calling me names for it? But Rabbi Yossi says, listen, you see here it was only a matter of your own covet, and yet you stayed away. So you see, it's not pure. It's not always purely l'kavod shamayim. Benny Oyada has an explanation about this, actually. He says that there may have been a little bit of like joking back and forth between them. Rabbi Yossi is telling him, after all, Eliyahu was telling him, if you're calling me a captain, listen, like a captain Malamed, as it says in Pirkei Avos, you can't learn Torah from a captain. So therefore, I had good reason to stay away. If you're going to call me a captain, then I have to fulfill what it says in Pirkei Avos, like a captain Malamed. And Rabbi Yossi also answers him with a little bit of a joke that, no, that shows that if it was that you were staying away because of the Mishnah, then why'd you come now? Why'd you come back after 3 days? So they're both, he says they're kind of like joking around a little with each other. The Mishnah had said, the Pasuk says, nothing of the banned objects of the Ur Nidachas are allowed to remain in your possession, which is actually a loisus. A person has hanach, many of that, and he gets malchus for it. And the Mishnah continues, as long as Rishoyim are in the world, there's anger of Hashem in the world, and then when the Rishoyim are removed from the world, then Hashem's anger goes away as well. As it says in the Pasuk, Man Yoshua Hashem Echaroin Apoy. So the Gemara says, when we say Rishoyim, Man Rishoyim, which Rishoyim are we talking about? And the point of the question is, in other words, we don't just mean the people of the Ur Nidachas, because the Mishnah is mentioning this in connection with the Cherem, in connection with the property of the Ur Nidachas. So we can't just say that it means once the people of the city are destroyed, then Hashem's anger goes away.
It's because they
we say their lives are spared, but their property is destroyed. So who are these Rishoyim who were saying that when they're destroyed, then the Charoinach goes away? Rabbi Yosef Ganvi. Rabbi Yosef says it means thieves. So thieves in general, in particular, here it means people who steal from the property of the Ur Nidachas. It does more generally mean thieves. But there is, in other words, when there are such people in the world, Marshall explains the connection is whenever you have people, when there are thieves in later generations as well, they have a cherem, they make a cherem in shul about people who do that, and these ganovim continue to violate the cherem, therefore they cause charoi naf in the world. So Marshall says that's the connection with the cherem that we're talking about over here, of the Ur Nidachas. A number of the Mefarshim explain that we mean specifically the ones who steal from the property of the Ur Nidachas. There's a sicha in Chelik Yud Zayin, a hadron that the Rebbe made on Masechta, where the Rebbe discusses, fine, but in that case, then why are we focusing on those ganovim? What does Avodah Zarah have to do with Gneva? There's even an expression in a Medrash that stealing is tantamount to Avodah Zarah. So the Rebbe discusses the point, in other words, that, Since the Mishnah is talking about Avodah Zarah, we're going to quote a Braisa now that talks about Averis in general. The point is, in other words, we want to look for some kind of Avera that causes a Pu'ula Nimsheches, where it's an ongoing thing, where not just, in other words, it was a one-time thing that was done, and that's that, but it's an ongoing thing, and as long as that thing continues to be ongoing, then there's anger of Hashem, so therefore Rabbi Yosef is saying, people who stole from the Ur Nidachas, because now you have, as long as he doesn't pay back the Gneva, then there's still Charoi Naf Ba'olam, and the Braisa is going to say that there's a similar thing with other Averis as well, as long as a person didn't do Tshuva, then he's a Rosha, and there's still Hashem's anger in the world. The Rebbe actually connects it back with the beginning of the Masechta too, because in the beginning we had about the various sides of the Beis Din, all the way up to you had the Sanhedrin Gdola of 71. Now the Sanhedrin Gdola, the Medrash tells us in Tanit Ve'Eliyahu that after they settled Eretz Yisrael, everybody just went off to their own farms and fields and whatever, and the Sanhedrin at that point should have been going around from town to town and teaching the people Torah and getting them to do tshuva. And they didn't, which is why you had throughout the whole period of the Shoftim that again and again people are worshipping Avodah Zarah and getting into trouble. So therefore, the connection is, he was saying, as long as there's a Shoyim, there's anger of Hashem, meaning that it's the job of the Sanhedrin Gdola to avoid that, to make sure that there are no Rishoyim by circling around from town to town and helping everybody do tshuva, and that way getting rid of the Haroi Naf Hashem from the world. But that's why, so the Rebbe explains that that's why we have specifically Gandhi over here. We do mean, like the Mefoshim say, it means people who stole from the Irani Dachas, but the point is that it's not just they stole and that's it, it's a done deal. No, it's an ongoing thing. As long as they have that stuff in their possession, then there's still Haroi Naf in the world just as much as long as there's still people who are worshipping Abba Dazara in the world, then there's Haroi Naf Hashem.
And the way the Aradakas still is stolen from is
so that's the thing.
Hefker also.
It's Hefker, right, but it's not technically stealing, but nevertheless, there's still that pull of the Nimshachas, yeah. So the Gemara finishes off, Tana Rabbanan, Rosha Bala Olam, when a Rosha comes to the world, Charoin Bala Olam, then anger of Hashem comes to the world. Now, a Rosha doesn't really come to the world in the sense that Tzadik V'Rosha Lekam, Hashem doesn't predetermine who's going to be a Rosha. So there is actually, there is an explanation that we're talking about that a person, that, for example, a mamzer, that a mamzer was born, then already there's Haroi Naf in the world, but aside that, we don't mean necessarily that he was born a Rosha, but we mean that he has a tendency to, based on what his parents did when they were having relations. So anger of Hashem comes to the world. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Bevoi Rosha, when the Rosha comes, Bo Gam Buz, then also humiliation comes to the world, the Im Koloin, and together with the embarrassment, Cherpa is humiliation. We're saying over here, so we mentioned the Rosha, the word Koloin, in addition, is also related to the word Kola, which means burnt. So therefore, so it means, so that Rashash explains that it means, in other words, if we see that the anger of Hashem flares when you have a Rosha comes to the, when a Rosha comes to the world. So it can mean when the Rosha was born, it can mean when the person becomes a Rosha, and like now he made himself into a new kind of person who's a Rosha. So anyway, so we see that that brings Hashem's anger into the world. On the other hand, Rosha Ovid Min HaOlam, but when the Rosha is gone from the world, and it doesn't mean that he has to die, it can mean that he does tshuva, that ever develops in that sikha as well. It can also mean that he does tshuva, and now he's not a Rosha anymore. Then, Tova Ba'al HaOlam, then good comes to the world, Shenem Uvavoid Rishoyim Rina, as the Pasuk says, when the Rishoyim are destroyed or gone, then there's happiness. On the other hand, Tzadik Niftim Min HaOlam, when a Tzadik passes away from the world, Ra Ba'al HaOlam, and evil comes to the world. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, a tzaddik ovad, the tzaddik is lost, the ein ish somal lev, nobody is paying attention, the anshe chesed ne sofen ve ein mevin, people who do chesed are being gathered in, and nobody's understanding, kim ipne hara, nesaf a tzaddik, the tzaddik is being gathered in and passes away because of the evil. In other words, before the evil comes, Hashem makes the tzaddik pass away, first of all, chusim don't help them, but also that he dies without having to live to see the evil that's going to happen.
If the
so we're saying the Ein Maven, where nobody realizes that the source of the tzaddik is protecting them, where they realize, and that's different. But we're saying when people think, oh, tzaddik, big deal, then we're saying that his source doesn't protect them. And yet, Marshall goes into a little bit of an arichus over here. First of all, he points out by the Rosha we say Ovad, by the tzaddik we say Nifter, because the tzaddik is never truly gone from the world. He's only Nifter. He disappears from us, but he's still alive. On the other hand, the Pasuk uses the expression Ovad because that's from the point of view of the Rishoyim, as far as the Rishoyim are concerned, the tzaddik is lost, that he's gone, and we're never going to see him again. And Marshal goes on and explains various psukim in that context over there, where the Rishoyim are saying, let's eat and drink and make merry, and they don't care about how things are going to be in the future. On the other hand, the Gemara finishes off on a positive, the Braisa finishes off on a positive note. Tzadik Bala Olam, a tzadik comes to the world, very appropriate today, is Yud Aleph Nissen, Tova Bala Olam, then goodness comes to the world, Shenema, as we find by Noach, Zeyinachamenu, Maasenu, Meitzvenidenu, already as soon as he's born, they're saying this one will comfort us from our hard work and from the toil of our hands, so just the fact that the tzadik is born already, then the evil stops. As it says, there was a famine going on when Noach was born, and when he was born, then it stopped. off. You have various improvements that Noach made to the world. So we see that not only the evil goes away, like in that case the famine, but good comes to the world, and the Eibishter brings brachas to the world in the schus of the tzaddik, who now will work on making the world a better place. Hadran, since we said at the beginning of the parak, Ko Yisrael Yishon Chayot Olam Abba, and Ba'amach Kolam Tzadikim, so it means any Yid comes to the world as a bigger bracha, is a bigger bracha for the world, and he brings goodness with him. Hadran Allah Ko Yisrael Yishon Chayot, or Slik Olam Asech to Sanhedrin. Mazel Tov, everyone, Yishkayach. We will